Appreciate the introduction, Lucas. First of all, I'd like to begin by thanking my co-authors here, Paul Nee from the University of Warwick in the UK, Ken Smith with the University of Arkansas, Chuck Forstman with Syngenta, and Ian Zalea, who's also with Syngenta. This is a collective effort that we've been underway for about a year, year and a half now, where we've been looking at essentially the evolution of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth in cotton. When we take a look at cotton, I want to just give you kind of a quick overview. This is, everyone sitting here probably already knows most of this, but again, it's a monoculture crop, and that's basically what's led to the situation we're currently in. We have widespread, or had widespread adoption of the Roundup Ready cotton technology. 1999, 2000, we began to widely adopt it, and as a result of that, we had heavy reliance on glyphosate. If you take a look at the Mid-South, we're mainly dealing with a stale seedbed production system where we have no in-crop cultivation. It's probably been over 10 years now since I last saw a cultivator run through a field. And as a result of that, we've now seen widespread glyphosate resistance. And that's not only in Arkansas, but in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and the entire Mid-South. I called my counterparts in various states here about a month ago and asked them about the impact that glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth has had on their state. And this is just kind of an overview. What you see is there's about over 2 million acres of cropland. This is mainly cotton, but also some soybean has been impacted as a result of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, where essentially production practices have had to be changed on those acres. This is some of the work that I presented at the Southern Weed Science meeting of last year, and then Paul Neve presented at the International Weed meeting in June of this past year, looking at the evolution of glyphosate resistance. And what you see here, and you've already seen the slide today, essentially is if you go to a total post program of glyphosate only, the evolution of resistance occurs rather rapidly. In a year of about five to six, you have 67% likelihood of Palmer amaranth evolving in this system. And I think this, if you take a look at where we are in the Mid-South and when we started using glyphosate heavily, I think this really matches well with where we currently exist. In terms of objectives, what I want to do today is I want to take a look and I want to demonstrate to you that the knowledge of the emergence pattern of Palmer amaranth, and you can apply this to other weeds, is crucial to understand that in order to understand the evolution of herbicide resistance and understand essentially how to most effectively use a herbicide. And then I'm going to use the model to evaluate the risk of glyphosate resistance in Palmer amaranth under rotation systems, particularly looking at rotating traditional cotton production systems, one that we'd had 10, 15 years ago with that of a Roundup Ready program. Now, one of the backbone components of this model is essentially biological data, specifically an emergence curve. This is actual emergence data that I collected that we used in this model. And what we have in the model, just kind of show you how things are set up here, we have make this cursor work. On the y-axis here, we have cumulative emergence. This is in a percent basis, and the yellow line, which I'm showing you here, the yellow line essentially is the cumulative emergence over time. In our scenarios that we had, emergence began on April the 20th, and it ceases somewhere in August, but you have a curve here. You also have about five or six potential times that you can apply herbicides during a cotton growing season. You see your pre-plant burn down on March the 30th, and you can see it proceeds on towards a lay-by directed on July the 1st, being the last application in the growing season. We also have between each of those intervals, we have what we call cohort one, cohort two, and so forth, which essentially are Palmer amaranth plants that emerge during that window. These are the ones that we're going to have to control with each of these herbicide applications here. And what we've done in the model is we assign efficacy ratings or control ratings to each of these cohorts. I'm not going to share with you the assumptions of the model today. It would take me 30 to 40 minutes to really go in depth into the model. The model was covered in detail at the Southern Weed Science meeting last year. The assumptions were put forth at that point. Also, we're in the process of trying to publish some work in Weed Science, and hopefully once it's published there again, the assumptions will be made available to you. But what I'm going to present today, we have 250 runs of a model, and that essentially just means that we ran it 250 times, assuming that we had 250 independent fields at which resistance potentially could evolve. So we assume these fields to be independent from one another. We do not have pollen-mediated gene flow. We do not have seed dispersal among fields. They are independent fields. And we assume resistance to occur, or producer to notice resistance, once 20% of the pigweeds in those fields have evolved resistance. Before that point, we assume that it's probably not going to be a noticeable case of resistance. Move on to the results and discussion. I want to first take a look, and I'm going to go back to my emergence model or emergence curve, and I want to ask a couple of questions here. First, do multiple seasonal applications of the same mode of action increase the risk of resistance? Does that always occur? If we have multiple applications of the same mode of action, is it going to increase the risk of resistance? If I were to ask you in here, most of us probably would say yes. Well, I'm going to say no. That's not always the case. And I'm going to show you why here using our emergence curve. Let's take reflex, for instance. And this is some of the data that actually went into the model. If you take a look at reflex, based on the data that we have, it provides about 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks worth of 100% control of Palmer amaranth. Here's the emergence curve that I'm showing you here, the yellow curve. The gray bar is the efficacy over time. Now, if you take a look at the number of pigweed seedlings that, as they emerge, that are seeing reflex, you see that about 80% of the pigweeds that emerge during the growing season actually see reflex. 80% of them are actually seeing a PPO inhibitor. Now, this would be a system very characteristic of what you would see in the Southeast, where they put reflex down at planting. Now let's take a look at a program that we would have, let's say, just in the Mid-South. Reflex in the burn down, applied March the 30th. Again, about 8 weeks worth of residual reflex, it begins to decline. What you see on the front end there is about 35% of that pigweed population that's emerging during the growing season is actually seeing reflex, seeing a PPO inhibitor. Valor, we come in and we put Valor out, another PPO inhibitor on July the 1st. Well, you only have 5% of the remaining pigweed that's in that field that's going to emerge throughout the remainder of the year. So collectively, we're talking about roughly 40% of the pigweed that emerged that growing season is actually seeing a PPO inhibitor from a residual standpoint. So the point that I want to make here, I think I've heard individuals go out and say, don't recommend multiple PPOs in a growing season. I think it's more to it than that. You really need to understand when you're using that PPO, when the Palmer amaranth or any weed in particular is merging in terms of the likelihood of evolution of resistance. Definitely it would be lower with this second scenario where I'm using two PPOs versus that of the first scenario. Another comment I've heard made, use additional modes of action. That will solve the problem. I've recommended that myself. Go out and use additional modes of action. Well, let's take a look at that. And again, this is actually from some of the modeling work that we've done. The yellow bar is the one that I was showing you previously where we had 5 applications of glyphosate. Again, 67% risk of resistance in about year 5, year 6. The one that I'm showing you on the right-hand side is the system here that is actually the white line. It's glyphosate. You see that we have a flumeturon, a PS2 inhibitor, metolachlor, and acetamide, promotrin, and flumioxazin essentially applied in part of our weed management program. What you notice is over time, the risk of resistance actually increases. And in about year 20, it actually exceeds that of the total glyphosate program. And you say, how could that occur? Why? Well, the modeling effort actually allows us to go back in and take a look at this. What I've shown you here, again, this is the residual control or this is the efficacy of each of these herbicides, with the exception, glyphosate's not in here, but you see of Reflex, Cotarin, Dual, Caporal, and Valor. The point that I want to make is, based on the timings that I had shown you on the previous slide, if you take a look, let me see, I wish I had a pointer, but if you take a look in this section right in here at the emergence curve, what you notice is essentially we do not have a herbicide out there at that time of year that's providing effective control of Palmer amaranth. As a result, those plants are emerging, those plants are getting size on them, those plants are surviving, those plants are producing seed. Well, resistance to some extent is a function of the soil seed bank because the resistance frequency is set. If the soil seed bank begins to grow, which here it begins to grow exponentially, so does the likelihood of resistance. So the point here is, if you're going to use additional modes of action or you're going to use herbicides, you've essentially got to cover the entire emergence curve of the intended weed here. Now, I'm going to go back in again. This is what I'm going to call Roundup Ready Program A. This is the one I was showing you earlier, five applications of glyphosate. And I just want to compare that to a very efficacious Roundup Ready program. This is one where we use various herbicides. They're effectively timed. We use multiple modes of action here. And what we see is, over time, we've reduced the risk of resistance from 67% down to no more than 10% over the 30 years. Also, you've noticed we slightly, but not to a great extent, we've delayed the likelihood, the evolution of resistance by about 1 to 2 years. Now, that is, again, continuous. This is continuous Roundup Ready cotton. It's just, again, we're using the program that I've shown you on the right rather than going total glyphosate program. Now, this is the one, I'm not saying that we're going to go back to this, but let's say if you take Roundup Ready B program, the white bar down there, and in year one you grow it, and in year two you go back to what we were doing 10, 15 years ago. Conventional cotton, which is what I'm showing you on the right-hand side, and you incorporate two cultivations at the first post timing, the second post timing. We have cultivation in combination with dual or with Caporal. Essentially, what we see here, this program is very similar to the one I'd shown you on the previous slide, with the exception of cultivation and also the MSMA at lay-by. And what we notice is the risk of resistance now is no more than 2% over the 30 years of this program here. And this is in a 1-to-1 rotation of Roundup Ready cotton with conventional cotton. So, in summary, multiple applications of the same mode of action may not increase the risk of resistance. I think that's something that is quite obvious. The key here is really understanding when the particular weed emerges, and by understanding when it emerges, we can best time our additional modes of action to try to delay the risk or reduce the risk of resistance. Also, again, if you take a look at that last modeling slide that I was showing, there's roughly, actually a little more than, a 23-fold reduction in the risk of resistance if we had taken a traditional cotton production system and rotate it with a program where we're effectively using other modes of action in conjunction with a glyphosate-only production system. So again, I think we could effectively reduce the risk of glyphosate resistance evolving. At this time, I'd like to acknowledge the support of Syngenta for helping support this project, as well as Cotton Incorporated, and I'm going to open the floor to questions. I will say this is Paul Neve here on the left-hand side, and I think most of you in here know that's Dr. Ken Smith on the right-hand side. Any questions?
Boy, that surprises. Thank our speakers.